This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everybody. This is episode one of Despite My Tones, a podcast that was thrust upon me by my followers. For the last 2 years, I've had DMs asking me, do I have a podcast? Do I have a YouTube? I have none of those things, but ask me long enough and I'll do anything. So here we are. And over the next hour, assumedly, I'll teach you why you should not ask me for more of me. And maybe we could start getting regulations on microphones because you could just buy this. I went in the store and just bought this and they didn't even ask. Well, I could see the look on his face. He knew what was happening and was disappointed. But yeah, they should probably not let you do that. So the formula, I don't have one. I have no idea. If you've heard my videos, essentially I will start at a point that seems coherent and then I will end somewhere that is confusing and alienating. And now that's going to stretch out over probably a 40-minute span. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to leave it to y'all to let me know if that needs to stop. So here we go. I do have some jumping off points. So I opened up dialogue to my followers and said, what do you want to hear about? And I had a few responses that I felt interested in, and then some that I did choose to ignore. And as I lose content and things get boring, I'll revisit those and hopefully, no, I won't. But after this episode, hopefully you guys are you know, able to see what I do and don't want to talk about and you can ask me questions. So we're going to start with the first one, which is going to send me on an extremely long dialogue about a career that I feel so many emotions about. So this is, first off, this is, behind me is a TV. I just realized this is going to be an audio format and you don't know what the hell is going on. Behind me is a TV. Next to me, to my right, it's going to be your left. There's some cool things. And then in the chair is me and I look great. So envision that and now you're here in the room with me. So behind me is... it is a question from Savannah Woodward. She's a follower from like day one. Shout out Savannah. She's amazing. She said, I'd love to know more about your tattoo experience prior to this and the evolution to painting or vice versa. She is referencing my painting career for those of you who don't know who I am. And that is an infinitely larger number than those who do. I have been successful in painting into thrift store art, different characters and objects. It is a ridiculous career that has gone on for far too long. Yeah, they're behind me, actually, my producer points out. So, oh yeah, you can't see that if you're listening to the podcast. This is going to be completely reckless for the pretend you're blind. And I will paint you a picture, both, well, I've already done it, but I will paint a second picture about the pictures I painted. Behind me are things like Roger from American Dad painted into an old Italian painting. I have Chainsaw Man in the woods near a cabin fighting the tomato monster. Lord of the Rings, and up above me, and I doubt it's in frame, is probably one of my favorite paintings, and it's Tina Belcher and Bob Belcher in an extremely exaggerated, fantastical setting as she rides a horse. The point is, those are the things I do. That has somehow turned into a job, which I do blame the followers. You guys have taken this maybe too far. I love it, and I'd love for it to continue, but there is going to be a point, I think, maybe 5 years from now where we all look back and you think, man, we really let that guy go hard for way too long, and we gave him money, and he spent it on dumb stuff. So I do thank you, and if this ever does end, I won't blame you, but you guys have given me an awesome career, so I am happy about that. So prior to this, this tribalistic support of stupid stuff on the internet, I did what I would consider a real job as a tattoo artist, which is, that's a loose term, because as I was a tattoo artist, it was told to me many times, this is not a real job. And I don't know that I miss that career. There were a lot of good things about it, and there were a lot of rough things about it that, from the sound of it, have only gotten worse. For one, there's a term being thrown around called tattoo-mageddon. I see it online a lot. Apparently, it is hard to work. There's not a lot of people. I guess the hype is dying. As much as we all hated collectively in that industry, the shows like Inked and other things like Inked, there were like 10 of them. I don't remember any of them, but you know, we hated them because that was a cool thing to do. The truth is, it was driving a lot of business. It normalized tattooing, and I came in maybe right at the beginning of those shows blowing up. There was Miami Inked, the first one with Kat Von D. I came into tattooing right about that point, and I was unaware of things what it was like prior to that. I was told very often by the old meth heads that the new meth heads were entitled. So I learned that's so offensive. They weren't entitled, but they were all meth heads. We came in at the start of what I would consider like a cultural wave of tattooing becoming completely fine. And because of that, we did quite well effortlessly. Financially, I jumped straight into making decent money. Now, decent money in the tattoo world means that you make about $60,000 and you do not pay your taxes. So for the ruffians and the people scraping their bellies on the bottom of the ocean, that's great money. I was not complaining. I came from $45,000 as a salary, and taxes were paid. I did eventually pay taxes, but I did it long after it had become a problem with the IRS and they charged me fees. So I'm not giving advice on doing it early. Honestly, if you're a tattooer, you need to live the lifestyle where everything's very difficult and irresponsible. That's just part of it. So I still encourage that. But that tattoo career was both a gift and kind of a curse. It did trap me in something that I thought was my dream. When I started tattooing, I was extremely happy. I did not do your traditional apprenticeship, and that's upsetting to a lot of other tattooers. They don't like to hear that. They call you a scratcher, which I was. I basically bought a machine on eBay and ruined friends all through high school. And then I dropped it for a while I went and worked in the oil industry and then the photography industry. And then around 24, 25, I took it seriously, put together a portfolio, and I went and got a job at a studio that, if you had asked me the day I got hired, I would have sang their praises. But looking back, hiring me was insane. I was completely untested. I had a lackluster portfolio. I'd never worked in a shop. But now that I'm out of that shop, I worked there about 3 or 4 years. I get it. I get why I was. I was actually probably one of the more responsible artists in that group. So I learned a lot about that industry the hard way. Everybody does. I think there's like a shining package that gets put on it through media like Inked. But the truth is, the things your Ink Master. Yeah, Inked is a magazine. Ink Masters, that's right. I was in the industry and couldn't care less about these things. That's, you know, it's cool to not like them. If you're a tattoo artist and you mention that you watch Ink Masters, you get alienated very quickly. You got to hate your own industry, or else what are you doing? That's how we drive ourselves as artists. Yeah, I was almost on Ink Master twice. So what's going to happen over the next few minutes is I'm going to probably shit on myself endlessly and pretend like I was not a successful tattooer. But the truth is, I did quite well. I owned two shops at one point, and I had my private studio going. And I'd gotten through the process of Ink Masters up to the point where I was talking to producers. And the first time I talked to them, I was not a fan of a lot of the coercion that went on in the, it's just occurring to me now that I'm not even sure where I'm supposed to end with this whole thing. I know I'm just supposed to tell you what it was like tattooing, but now I'm going to go on a long rant about how the production process goes. And that's just what it's like to deal with me. I'm sorry. Take fucking notes. So the, The production process on those shows is as bad as you think it is. The clothing they wear is not the clothing they wear in a normal day-to-day thing. They basically will dress you the way the producers think you should be dressed. They'll create a character archetype out of you. The people who are assholes on that show are just coerced to be assholes. They're probably the nicest people you know. I almost certainly would have been a heel just based off of my general tones. I saw it coming down the pipeline. I was going to be an asshole on that show. I knew it. So I got to the end where I was talking to the producers on the first round of checking them out, which I went to them. I filled everything out. I was like, you know, this will be great for my career. I'll get on that show and then I'll be booked out fully and I'll open a shop. I was probably only like 4 years into my career at this point. Everything was going fine until they started coercing me to say certain things. They were like, if someone wanted to get in a fight with you on the show, what would you do? And what they wanted me to say was, I will commit a crime in order to be entertaining on TV. But the truth is, I'm not really that confrontational unless it gets pushed very far. So I gave them that answer, and I could literally see them like hovering over the escape button on the Skype. So they're already done with me. So I think I intentionally tanked that interview in the end when I realized every answer that – I mean, it's not hard to figure out what they want you to say. Like if they're like, if somebody comes in the room and calls you a bitch, what are you going to do? I know what you want me to say. I'm going to pistol whip them and then I'll throw a fit. But the truth is, they did. They had a tagline for me. I don't remember what it was. It hurt, physically hurt me to say it. And I said it once before I knew that they were taglining me. And she's like, do you think you could probably give us a little more? Say it again, bigger. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm not. What was it? God, it's horrifying. That's worse. Yeah, that's the ick. You know that meme where they've got the girl from Euphoria crying in front of the mirror trying to smile, and someone's always putting their husband singing in the shower behind her? It's that moment where I'm in the other room yelling a tagline to my computer for producers in New York, and I'm dying inside. So in the end, I just dropped that entire thing. Fast forward past that, I started actually having some media showing some of my artwork. Local news talked about a few, you know, in the local area, I'm doing fine for myself. They came back and they had a new show called Ink Master Angels, and they invited me on that one. And I told them up front, I'm not doing any of the tagline stuff. You're not dressing me like a fucking idiot. I'm not wearing a fedora and shaving a goatee. It's not happening. And they sighed and were disappointed, but they said, that's fine. We're just looking for people in the area that are already established. So, and we like the, at this point, I think I'm posting on social media, and the thing I am, here where it seems unhealthy and maybe I don't have a great grasp on my mental, stability, that was already starting to bleed out into my social media. I think they liked that. So they were aiming for that and they wanted me on there. And I got all the way up to 2 days before they shot that show and I pulled out at the last minute. And I think it was just that deep-seated fear that once they got me on camera, I had no more control and they were going to do what they were going to do anyways and start editing me how they want. So I have no idea how to segue this back to where I started, so we're just going to land back there now. Essentially, tattooing for me was a constant grind of trying to build my career into something that I felt comfortable with, and it occurred to me on probably year 5 when I opened my first shop with a business partner that I was actually working for at the time, that if you want to be successful in tattooing, maybe 0.5% of people can just charge extremely high fees based on their skills, but 99% of tattooers are going to need to open a shop. And so that kind of hit me hard because I think I'd always dreamed of my art itself carrying me, and knowing that I have to now be a business owner it's disheartening. And that I'm kind of saying that to anyone who tattoos right now, even though it sounds like I'm shitting on the industry, it is still a very fun job and it's a cool art form, despite its limitations, like, you know, your artwork changing over 20 years, but it is still a cool job. The truth is, though, if you want to be extremely comfortable, if you want to have a nice...
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Car, you're going to have to go to school for some business lessons and open up your own business because, you know, or don't. Actually, to be honest, I don't know a single business owner that has any semblance of how to run a business. They just sort of open it up about an hour after it's supposed to and then collect some cash, and then the IRS comes around and then they turn the lights off. So you don't have to actually know anything. You could just open a shop. That's the truth. I'll be honest. You need a DBA, and you need a building with AC most of the time. And then you've got yourself a functioning tattoo shop. And then if you can get somebody whose drug addictions are at least within the realm of manageable, then you'll probably do fine. I'm trying to think of a single tattoo shop I would call a respectable establishment. They're really good of front-loading all of their positive attributes to the customer. And you'll see that in reviews, like, made me very comfortable, you know, great artwork. But what you don't know is the moment the customer leaves, it's a fucking jungle. It is the most irresponsible children artists on the planet, all gathered in one room. And there's probably a group chat that has the boss in it where they share incredibly inappropriate things. And if HR was involved at all, they would quit constantly. And that's the best job I've ever had. That's probably the best part of that. Tattooing is incredibly unprofessional on its basic level, and I love it, and I really hope it never changes. And it is sad to hear that they're probably out there struggling, but I did that for about 10 years. A lot of what wore me down actually has nothing to do with the art itself. I still am fascinated with tattooing. In fact, if I get bored doing this, I may go back to doing it. What wore me down was that it's physically debilitating. My back is still fucked and will probably be for a long time. I have neck issues from when I tattoo. I cock my head to the left and just hold it that way for hours on end. And that's left a pretty nasty toll on me. I also, I'll admit, painting, it has its charms in that I work with big brands that have not once tried to fight me outside. And with tattooing, it happened more times than I can count on one hand. And that's an absurd job. When your customer can quickly turn into your MMA match, it's a weird job. I didn't work anything else like that. There was, there's a few stories that I don't condone violence at all, but I will enjoy it when it's supposed to happen. And we had a few people push all the way to the edge. One guy harassed a female customer that I was tattooing, and she had a boyfriend with her, and her boyfriend's friend was there. And both of these gentlemen are like 6'3". Quite intimidating. So I don't know what this dude was doing, but he kept showing up drunk. And we had a piercer, which I don't recommend those. Well, if you're getting piercings, they're great. If you're running a business, don't hire one of those. But we had a piercer there. He had a t-shirt with a woman on it that was, I think it was just like an anime face of a girl. But either way, this guy came in drunk and sexually harassed his t-shirt, which was a very, I don't know what I'm supposed to do in that scenario. So there's technically a man in the shirt who's also wearing that shirt for probably not great reasons. And now his shirt's being sexually harassed by an inebriated man. And I don't know who to intervene on and also why I would. So that unfolded for long enough that everyone was uncomfortable. And then eventually the drunk dude switched his eyes onto my client, and that's when it got real. And he harassed us for a while. Eventually he got ran out the door. 5 minutes later, he was back in, out the door. 5 minutes later, back in. Now he doesn't have a shirt. We don't know where that went. Back out the door, and then he comes back with a firework. Doesn't light it, just throws the firework, but it's heavy enough that it cuts my client's head, the girl. So all hell breaks loose. I degloved. We ran outside. He was handled. But the thing is, the two gentlemen that were with her, I go inside, and I'm checking on her, and I realize after about 10 minutes, I don't know where they are. It's quiet inside, and I look outside, and they're still going to town on this guy. Which is not that funny. Or I feel like it shouldn't be that. I feel like you'll judge me if I find it funny. That's the kind of situation it is. So they're working this guy over, and he's unconscious. And eventually they just leave. They never even come back inside. They leave, and they leave her there, which was really weird. And then she kind of like pays me. I feel like I gave her a discount. That would have been the best thing to do. I hope I did. So she leaves also, and the guy is still laying in the parking lot probably about 20 minutes later. I'm getting very nervous. And then he eventually moves, which is a huge relief. And he tucks himself into the parking lot like it's a bed. I watched him grab air and roll over, and then he pulls his pants down and pees in the parking lot. So all of this is kind of horrifying. Funny now. At the time, not so much. And then the cops show up 45 minutes later, which in this area is a pretty good response time, actually. I think I was quite proud of them. So they show up. They have no interest in doing anything. But the problem is, I did not actually hurt this man. That was the two gentlemen for a long time that just went completely nuts on him. However, I'm the last thing he saw before he was unconscious, which means that now he's bloodied, talking to two police officers, pointing at me the entire time. I'm 5'10 in my mind. I think we've discovered I'm 5'9 and a half. At the time, I weighed 140 pounds. The dude that got beat up is like 250 pounds, 6'2. It's the one time the cops did some detective work in that area, and they look at me and they look at him and they go, "He didn't do that to you," which hurt my feelings so bad. But it did get me out, it did get me out of a pretty serious crime. And then they came over and they told me, this gentleman said that you did this to him. And I did the whole, "I mean, look at me." And they both were like, no, we know. We're just doing our due diligence. You couldn't do this to anybody. Really just driving home. I went home with the music off that night in the car. It hit me in so many different ways. A very emotional night. I'm making jokes about it now, but it bothered me immensely to be emasculated like that by two police officers and a drunk guy. So I think fondly on him that he thought I could do that. That's one of the nicest things anyone's ever said to me. Fully concussed with potentially a broken jaw.
Is this the guy who came back for his glasses?
Yes. So the story, as you're uncomfortable, just know that the story has an even worse ending. So about 3 days later, we get a phone call from a woman who is losing her mind at us, said that her husband was robbed and accosted by a tattoo artist at our shop and was missing his phone and his glasses and his wallet. And to be honest, despite me sounding like we're absolute pirates, we really wouldn't do that to someone. I knew all the artists there. I knew right away none of that's true. So I was trying to figure out what the hell she's talking about. Didn't take long after she described the man for me to realize who she was talking about. So I let her know, oh, no, that guy definitely got his ass kicked here. And it was actually two customers, and he was not robbed. They left empty-handed, so I don't know what you thought we took from him. And she said, "Well, I can see on Find My iPhone. It's out there. It's at the shop." So we went outside and found his busted glasses and phone in the bushes where the two dudes were working him over. I brought them inside. I called her back. She came to pick them up. And then as I explained the entire story to her, feeling like I'm having to defend myself, she got to the point where then she is now defending me in this conversation, saying, no, I forgot to mention on the phone. This happens to him a lot." So this guy, he's apparently a severe alcoholic, which through my childhood, I've experienced them before. You'd think I could have spot this man, but he likes to get drunk and then push people to a limit that they beat him up. I'm assuming it's a kink, and that makes me feel a lot better about the damage the other two dudes did. If you think about it, they really just delivered for free something that men do pay for. It's quite a high price these days, so it's a beautiful story, really, when you sum it up like that. But that's also tattooing. And I have maybe a fraction of those kind of experiences now as a painter. And I don't know that I don't miss the excitement. There are definitely boring days painting, but I don't miss the excitement of that world. It's just weird. Like, imagine you work, let's say, Walmart, and you clock in, and then one of your employees gets arrested mid-shift for manslaughter. Actually, I shouldn't use Walmart as an example there. That's extremely likely to happen. Aeropostale, and your manager gets arrested for manslaughter. And then the next customer that comes in is high on heroin and decides that he's going to pass out in the bathroom with his entire body blocking the door, which did happen. That, I think, would be a place that would get shut down. But at a tattoo shop, that's not even Saturday yet. So you know, it's a weird place. It's definitely ruined me. A lot of what you hear in my audio where you're like, this guy doesn't sound like he has a grasp on reality. I don't. You do 10 years in that kind of industry. And prior to that, I worked oil. So I don't have what you would consider a normal, well-mannered approach to things. I'm trying desperately, though. I mean, I'm very exposed on the internet. I have a lot more followers. I try my best to be family-friendly and pretend that these are not the things that shaped me. But unfortunately, they are. Tattooing especially. Oh, yeah. So I'm getting the circle from my my producer. So I have a Wrangler. So, you know, essentially, I'm like a Hollywood cat where... You can't put another one in my place when I'm not cooperating, but I do have a Wrangler who will clap and jingle things at me to let me know that we're nowhere near where we need to be. So that is the question. What was it like prior to painting that I tattooed? I tattooed and dealt with extremely insane things. I learned a lot of, I think it did make me a better person. I know that story. God, I actually really need to probably hit this part hard. I am not a terrible person, despite everything that you just, despite my tones. This is why we've named it this. I'm aware that the things I say and how I say them, you can come to some pretty intense conclusions. All of that story I told you, even though I find it very funny, it is a story about a guy being horribly assaulted while asking for it, I will emphasize. But that I also... On the other side of that, I carried the weight of that night for a while and felt terrible about everything that happened. And I still... Right, yeah. So she can attest that that wore on me for a long time. I make jokes about it because... So you have an option here. You can either choose to laugh at those horrible things that happen in those stories, or you can choose not to, in which case you now live in a world with less laughter, but that event still happened. So that's kind of my approach to all this. I do apologize as you go down that road with me. Another cool thing, though, that I did like about tattooing is it taught me when I opened a business that there are actually two forces in a city. There's the police force, which I believe has the undue idea imposed upon it that they prevent crime. They do not. They react to crime, sometimes very poorly. I've spent my entire life dealing with police. I had an alcoholic stepfather who liked to beat my mom up. And the police would show up with a gun and make it worse. That was basically what they did. So, and I will expand on. I'm not just going to graze over that. My mom got beat up a lot by my stepdad, and she never won. Very disappointing. Imagine you had, or at least were told, that there will be an MMA fight you are involved in. You don't get to know the date, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen often. And you don't buy, like, a punching bag and train at all? My mom was 0-10. It's insane to me. She didn't slip a punch once. She didn't win any of these. And she'd be the first to laugh about that now. But, like, that blows my mind. You're not going to train even a little bit. Because, like, I'm 9. I know it's coming. And I'm already training. So, for the moms out there. Anyways, I've dealt with the cops a lot because of stuff like that. They would show up. They didn't really help much. And I got robbed at a tattoo.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop a few times by the same dude. We know it was him. We had cameras. I would show the cops. I'd say, this gentleman robbed us, and they'd go, oh, that sucks. And I'd go, maybe I misunderstood what happens when I dial your number. And they're like, no, you got it. We show up, and we confirm that you have been robbed, and I will write on this piece of paper that you've been robbed, and then I'm going to give you a card, and you're going to call me back when you figure out who did it. And then I did, and he was like, oh, man, well, hopefully he comes around. So there's the cops. They don't actually prevent crime. And then there's the homeless. Now, that's the force that prevents crime. So I learned running tattoo shops that if you befriend the homeless, you take care of the homeless, they will actually stop crimes from occurring. I had many times, there was a gentleman named Jimmy. He was an alcoholic who was not going to stop drinking. I was fine with that. That's not my business. But I would bring him in after hours, and he would help me build the shop out. We built walls. Very talented individual. Loved the guy a bunch. Jimmy would let me know the next morning, hey, man, I just stopped a couple guys from robbing your shop last night. They were looking through your window. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But the fact is, I never had a cop tell me that. So I had a lot of peace knowing Jimmy was around. And he would tell me who to help, who not to help. He would even say, don't give money to that homeless guy. He's the bad kind. So and Jimmy might have been racist, now that I say that out loud. But he was a sweet guy. So he did help me out quite a bit. And so I've learned running a tattoo shop that the people who are struggling in the world are the most helpful people out there. Take care of them. They will take care of you. So anyways, yeah, I learned that you befriend the homeless people if you want to stop crime from occurring in your area, and then if that did not work, you can call the cops and they will confirm that it was a crime. So very, very helpful. But if I have an unfortunate amount of stories like that with tattooing. If you want to hear any of them, just, you know, comment under the video or something. I'll let you know. So the next question was, when are you finishing the Breaking Bad painting? Now, this seems extremely small compared to the prior question, but this is a great example of when I fuck something up so horribly that I don't even tell you guys I did it. The Breaking Bad painting, I started, let me see if I have anything to show you of it. I started painting it quite a few, maybe 6 months ago. This is as far as I got. This is Jesse, for those of you who are listening. I'm not upset with the way that looks. The problem is, there's times where I paint into other paintings that are so well done that matching the style feels almost impossible. And so what I had done with this one, the intent was I was going to paint Jesse and then I was going to paint Walter in a lawn chair next to the RV. And it was going to be a general vibe that they were in the desert and had just finished cooking and Jesse was having a cigarette. So what ended up happening was I cannot paint an RV worth shit. I gave it so many goes, and the painting this is going in is incredible. It's an old painting of a man with a horse in the Arabian desert. It's probably one of the best paintings that's ever been made. So the audacity of me to try and paint into that was already through the roof. But when I put the RV in there, I could not get the fidelity and the detail needed to match the original background. So there was a point where the characters I had put in were rudimentary and frustrating. And I recognize I'm being too hard on myself, but essentially there's a point where I cannot show you. My shame is so deep, and I believe I just crumpled that up and moved on with my life. But the problem is I did not communicate that at all. So what I said was, here's the Breaking Bad teaser. I will have the painting out in a week. And then what I did was tuck my head down and move on. And I didn't mention it at all. And a part of me hopes that's fine and I can continue that approach. But I know at some point I'm going to need to be maybe a little more responsible and communicate with you guys when something's gone down. This is also why I don't do pre-orders on prints, because that would have been rough.
Your customer support personnel would appreciate
Yeah, my customer support, who's also my producer, would not have appreciated that at all. So the answer to your question is I fucked it sky high. It's gone, and it's never coming out, and I will definitely make another attempt later. But when I fail, I am really bad about just going right back at it. I need some time away. I have to figure out what I did wrong. I need to be a better painter. That one, it's not happening. I'm sorry. So this is my way of letting you know, which feels toxic. This is a terrible way to let you know. This is sort of like me letting you know I canceled Christmas after I did it. So I know it's July. You guys will, if you remember December, something didn't happen. That's how it feels. And I do apologize for that, but it is what it is. Check this out. This is also only a service to people watching, but I can put my paintings up on here and just have them cycle through so you guys can just look at those. Isn't that cool? That was worth that TV. This is the time of the podcast, though, I feel I should mention that we have a sponsor, which is impressive for episode one. I know. So I'm going to plug them the best I can. 0X Gasless. They are the, let's read it off the board together, guys. Fueling AI agents without gas. So for those of you not in crypto, that is extremely confusing. Essentially, if you have automated agents doing tasks for you on the blockchain, they have to pay each other, and that is not easy. There is no infrastructure for that. So 0x Gasless is building it. Think of it like Venmo for AI. They can pay each other and do the little tasks you ask them to do. The world is changing fast, and it's horrifying, but I feel 0xgasless.com. I have to be professional there. So I feel I should pat myself on the back. We are a day one podcast sponsored by crypto, which means that I just need to start spreading medical misinformation, and we're legit, which I could start now.
Speaking of medical misinformation, I think you should show the people why you nose whistle, just in case it's happening.
Did I not?
No.
Oh, okay. So if you've heard what sounds like a train in the distance, it's likely my nose whistling. My producer wants me to show you. I will be getting this fixed. I'm apologizing in advance. I'm going to try my best to edit it out if it occurs, but none of you have been so close to my face that you pick up on that, and I'm hoping it's not happening now. But essentially, I have x-rays here of my nose. There you go. So for those of you listening, imagine two subway tunnels, and one of which has collapsed under the weight of Manhattan. That's what the inside of my face looks like. True. Yeah. Jesus Christ. I used to go live on TikTok. And I'll get back. This is my nose, broken on one side, my right nostril, which I will be getting fixed. But we spent the money to fix this on my wife, who I don't want to say you tried to die, but she got precancerous, and we spent a lot of money on that. So the nose will have to wait to be fixed. Here's the upper. Jesus Christ. I look like Groot. Oh, that's rough. So this is what it looks like from the top of my head. This is how crooked my nose is. By the way, I didn't know all this when I went into the doctor. And I'm only telling you this because it's very likely that for the last 20 minutes, you've just heard what sounds like the wind coming through an old porch door. But I went to get I got checked for allergies because I have severe allergies. And I believe I even have the photo of me reacting to the test. That's also embarrassing. But they gave me the prick test where she walked in the room and she's like, yeah, you're a fucking prick. But they hit you with a bunch of needles that are covered with all sorts of potential allergens. So this is my back. I am allergic to every letter of the alphabet. Again, for those of you that can't see it, it is a pale, broad back of a 30-something-year-old man, and it is covered in gross blistering welts, which indicates that I need medical intervention on my life. So I go to the doctor to get this done. She walks in the room and immediately begins roasting me and says, you are the most allergic person we know. Made fun of the fact that I can barely survive. I'm basically allergic to my own skin. And then this went on for like 30 minutes. I basically paid her to riff on me endlessly. And at no point have I been like functionally diagnosed or given any sort of medicine or any treatment. She really just spent a long time letting me know that this is absurd. Then she goes, oh, we got this really cool new machine. We can scan the inside of your nose and figure out why you're having a hard time breathing. And I was like, you don't think it's the shit happening on my back? And she was like, no, it shouldn't, which sucks. Now I have a whole nother problem. So she goes and scans my nose, where she now is calling other people over to laugh. Again, I paid for this. So it turns into a complete session of tearing me apart physically and internally. And then she tells me that I can also pay more money to stop being made fun of by her. So I had scheduled that. We had other things occur. But this is what she saw. And so they didn't have the lines on here. So on the photo here, there's these perfectly straight lines that indicate where your nose should be going. That didn't show up on the original image. She actually went in and added those to let me know how fucked my face is. And it's pretty bad. It basically just looks like cinnamon rolls that are trying to drift. That's what the inside of my head looks like.
And then she called me in.
Yeah, then she calls my wife in and was like, hey, come take a look at this. And I was like, yeah, this is good because she's probably going to need to know these things medically. And she's like, no, I just wanted her to laugh at this also. And so now I have just two people pointing at me and being like, you're so allergic and you can't breathe. Isn't that great? No, not really. And the worst part is I don't even have a great story for why my nose is so broken. It's just a series of shit that happened that I never took care of. You know, some Muay Thai training, a little bit of childhood fun, and so now I can't fucking breathe. And that's also, that might be why I avoided any podcast for a while, because there's a great chance that, you know, I'm going to whistle my way through it. Seven dwarfs my way through the podcast. But that will be fixed. There will be probably a few episodes I skip where I'm bandaged up and I just feel so... I probably just sound like shit, too. I mean, it's going to be a nasally nightmare. It's like Streisand without any of the actual talent. So I don't want to... I'll still show up. It's just going to be your problem, not mine. So there you go. That's what's coming down the pipeline is me fixing my face. Let's go back to the logo. I'm proud of this logo. I photoshopped this for hours. For those of you who can't see, that's going to happen throughout this entire podcast. One thing I do want to talk about, though, is the career aspect. the world is weird. So I get asked a lot about how to be a successful artist. The truth is, there's no right answer, but there's a lot of wrong ones. So I don't know if you guys noticed, there's always these repetitive fads going on in the art world. Someone's turning their canvas slowly, or they're putting, you know, certain songs over what they're doing, or time-lapsing like I like to do. The problem with art is marketing is folded into the art now. It used to be you could make really good art, and then you would have somebody market it, and it usually wasn't you. Maybe it's a gallery. Now galleries don't know how to market either. The world has moved so aggressively. I have galleries reach out to me who they like the fact that I market myself already, just inherently folded into what I do. It's like the painting and the marketing are one. And my advice for you is horrible. I have horrible advice for you guys. It's pragmatic and realistic, and it is so soul crushing. But the truth is, if you are not finding a way to roll the selling of your art into the making of your art, you're going to have an extremely hard time getting by. You're not likely to grow an audience off of just showing images of what your art, especially with AI now. There's a static image with nothing else going on, no proof of concept, no proof of construction. We're being jaded. There's a lot of people who are going to see that and immediately, if it's good, especially if it's very good, they're going to immediately say that's AI. For one, they're intimidated by the fact that it is good, so their first approach is going to be to devalue it. But secondly, they are being bombarded by fake imagery of art all day long, to the point where it is getting hard to differentiate. So if your hope is to be a functional artist who survives off of their artwork, all I can say is that you should probably... I feel terrible saying it. It's the thing.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Nobody wanted to hear. I know nobody wants to hear, unfortunately, your artwork is not enough, but that is the truth. Your artwork is not enough unless you are a world-class talent, an undeniable talent, and there's so few of those out there, and I would certainly never consider myself a part of any of that. It's not going to sell itself, and you have to find a clever way for them to be enjoying your art, and at the same time, that is the marketing, because just showing your image, it doesn't work. They might enjoy it, but there's nothing else to grab onto. The memory of it is gone so fast, especially if you consider that they just saw your artwork, not in a vacuum, as used to be the case if you walked into a gallery. They just saw your artwork scrolling between 100 different completely unrelated subjects, some of which so tantalizing and engaging that your artwork was forgotten. So if you can't find a way to market it in a loud, I don't want to say absurd because of that. I'm only saying that because that seems to be my approach. But if you can't find a way to market yourself in a loud fashion that stands out between the scrolling, you're probably going to drown. So take what happens on social media, which is everything. All of your artwork is seen through social media nowadays. There's nowhere else anyone's seeing it. You have to think of it as if you're in a gallery where they have 300 images lined up perfectly side by side with no seam between them. Are you going to remember your still frame in between all of those very engaging things, or are you going to forget about it? And that's happening for people every single day for hours on end, especially anyone who's just on their phone way too much. You're not going to stand out, and it hurts to hear that because I know a lot of artists were hoping that just being better technically was going to do it, but that's true. It's not the truth. I have done paintings before I started allowing myself to be unfiltered, which has benefited me quite a bit. I know when I make a video and then I just get on the mic and I don't have any filter on what's going on, it works fine, I think, because it's so absurd that it stands out. And I recognize that. But before I did that, I did just paint these paintings and put them up as static images, and I'd put a title up, and they did terribly. I mean, maybe 20 people liked them. And at the time I thought that was great because I was tattooing and it was a side hobby and I didn't think anything of it. But it occurred to me that I was holding back quite a bit of myself, both in tattooing and in painting. There was a lot of filtering myself, like, oh, I'm not going to say that. I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable, or I'm not going to be overly energetic. I don't want to be annoying. And I think I broke after owning my second shop and I was doing realism and feeling extremely burned out. So I started doing these paintings as a way to escape that. And I realized I was filtering myself in the paintings just as I was with tattooing. And tattooing, I talked to people all day, but there was a lot of letting them sort of guide the conversation and be comfortable with me and be who they want to be. And there was a lot of me being like, you know, don't, that's a funny joke, but also that could completely fuck the mood. So I filtered myself a lot. And then when I started painting, I realized I was doing that all over again. And I didn't feel like I was expressing myself well or authentically. So I felt cloistered again. So there was a day, and you can probably, if you look back at my videos 3 years ago, you can probably see the exact moment it happened. I went from posting still images to I posted a video of me painting, and I believe I went on a rant about sleep paralysis, which is something that plagued me forever, and it blew up. And that's when I realized that holding myself back as an artist was terrible marketing. So essentially, when you're trying to create art and market to people, if you are holding yourself back and not being authentic, you're just like everybody else out there. It doesn't stand out. The truth is you're weird. Everybody's weird. For sure, everybody's weird. And I tattooed long enough and talked to everybody to know that there's no such thing as a normal person. If you think you're normal, you're probably Jeffrey fucking Dahmer. There is no way anybody's normal. I have talked to thousands of people intimately for hours on end, and there is not a normal. Everyone's interesting. And if you're not interesting to the world around you, you are holding back for sure. And your art is suffering from it. So when you make your art, let that weird out. And it's in there too. I don't even know how to milk it out of you. But if you talk to someone long enough, they have the weird in them. We're all like that. And your weird might be that you're so fucking boring, it's interesting. But it's truthfully, it's in there. And that has to be folded into what you make. When you're making art, you're just selling a piece of yourself, and people want to buy that piece of you. They don't want to buy that static image and have no clue who made it. Banksy is still a person. You might not know who he was born as, but Banksy was a character that was built around those paintings. There's always somebody being bought when art is being bought. So who are you selling? And that's, I mean, I feel like it's terrible, or not terrible advice, but I feel like it's disheartening advice, because a lot of people want to quietly make art, put it online, have it be sold, and go about their peaceful lives. But the truth is, you cannot do that. You have to sell yourself. You have to expose yourself and get out there. And I think it's more fun. It's a horrifying thing to do at first, but honestly, I enjoy the fact that I can just be myself, and it works. And I'm supported aggressively, by the way. If you follow my social media, there's not really an opportunity for me to take a break. People become very upset when I do, and I get messages, where are you? What are you doing? And I'm going to pretend like it burns me out, but I love it. I like being supported for who I am. I don't like having to hide behind anything. And with tattooing, there was 50% who I was, 50% me trying to cater to the individual that I'm dealing with that day. And I feel like that's what a lot of you artists do online. You try to cater to who you think is looking at your photos or who you think is watching your videos. And a lot of times you catered wrong. You can't assume your audience. Just, you have to have faith in them that they're going to like you no matter who you are. And then eventually they love you so much they want to buy anything you make. And I think a lot of artists find themselves either stuck in trying to make something they think the audience wants, and that can become a perpetual, I mean, that's your, who you're talking about, you know, where you don't, or what you're talking about, Willis, that's what it is. That where you're basically stuck in a trope that you put yourself in because it was successful one time and you don't know how to get out of it. And I think the best advice I can give you is be as unabashedly weird as you can and market that within your art. Let everybody know who the weirdo making the art is, and they'll enjoy that. They'll catch on. So I don't know how long we've gone.
48 minutes.
I don't know how long I want these to be. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I don't even know. This is just a project that, like I said, it's born of you guys bullying me. You said you wanted something, so I'm making you something. And if you like it, fantastic, we'll keep going. And if you don't, I hope you say, as I show you this online, I hope you are very honest and say, hey, just paint. That would be fine. Because this is work. I don't know if you look. Like, I put these here, these little things. I set these little figures up. I put this here. There used to be paintings right here, and now there's a TV here. This is work for me. So if this does not work for you, I don't want to do it. If you love it, I'm going to do it all the time. You guys have given me an incredible life. You've supported me aggressively. You've built a career for me. I didn't do all this, by the way. like, I this wasn't like a vision. I wasn't tattooing and thought like, oh, I know how to get out of this. I just started doing this and being myself online, and you guys crafted a career for me, and you were insistent about it. So this is the result of that too. I'm just doing this because you asked, and I will stop if you ask. So let me know. I have an unfortunate amount of history with tattooing and graffiti and art styles. My whole life I have done art styles that I would not call socially acceptable. So I'm very used to the discomfort that can come from both the who I am, the way that I am, and the art that I make. I started with graffiti when I was young, and nobody liked that besides other artists. And then I moved into tattooing, and nobody liked that besides other artists. And so now I do thrift store art, and everybody really likes that besides other artists. So it's this is a unique territory for me, but I feel more authentic. I enjoy this a lot more, and I want to keep going with art. I'm going to keep going with art, whether you like it or not. I'm going to paint. I enjoy it. But here we are doing a new thing that you guys have asked me to do. I do have my limits. OnlyFans is the limit. I have been asked. I've considered, but it's not going to happen. The children enjoy my art, and that I actually like that a lot. So I have kids of my own, and the last thing I'm going to do is have an embarrassing history on the internet. So, well, no, that's I do have that though. It's likely I'm going to regret everything I've ever done. The paintings, the videos, certainly this podcast. So, the beauty is that you guys have asked me to do this, so I can always put the blame on you. So that's it. That's the end of episode one of Despite My Tones, a title that I feel so ambivalent about that is supposed to be in reference to my inability to regulate the way I talk and feeling guilty about it all the time. Also, a very, very lowbrow effort to reference back to painting. This may change. I will try not to have a constantly in flux podcast or creation, but the truth is I meddle a lot. I never feel comfortable about what I'm doing. I don't feel comfortable right now, and that might change too. But as we are, this is episode one. I love you all very much. Oh wait, no, I have to say the thing. Kay, love you, bye. that's my what you talking about, Willis. I shoehorned myself into that, but I do love you guys. And if you need more from me, just let me know. Okay, love you, bye.